Chapter 8. Nick's apartment was at the southernmost tip of the DFZ. He lived just half a mile from the airport, in a neighborhood that was a Tetris stack of extended-stay hotels, industrial office space, car rental agencies, and self-storage units. He actually parked inside one of the latter, driving his fancy car into a self-storage locker and locking the rolling metal door, which was a pretty cheap alternative to renting a private garage. His apartment was right next door in the basement of a nondescript building that seemed to be a mix of office space and closet apartments aimed at business travelers. The stairs down to his unit reminded me uncomfortably of the sub-basement where I'd found Dr. Lyle's body. But at least there was no unidentifiable sticky stuff or black mold. Quite the opposite. The stairs down to Nick's door looked like they'd just been pressure washed, and the security light was so bright it made my veins glow blue-green under my skin. Since it was basically underground, there were no windows, just a metal door set into a wall at the bottom that Nick opened with a key code. This was not an apartment you could sneak up on, in other words, and while I didn't normally appreciate the military-industrial vibe, that was something I could get behind tonight.
You can put your stuff wherever,
Nick said, turning on the light as we walked in.
Don't mind the mess.
Given that I was an unexpected guest at a bachelor pad, that comment had me braced for horrors. But the room I walked into wasn't messy at all. It couldn't be, because it didn't have anything in it. The bunker ambiance from outside didn't stop at the front door. Nick's apartment looked like the inside of a gray cement box. There was no carpet and nothing on the walls, just a high-efficiency ceiling light and smooth-poured cement top, sides, and bottom. One wall had a shelf built from cinder blocks and wooden boards stacked with what appeared to be Nick's daily necessities. Cleaning supplies, ammunition, weapons maintenance kits, a giant box of zip ties. There was a single metal folding chair and a plastic card table set up in the opposite corner, but otherwise the room was empty. There was no couch, no television, not even a closet for coats. And to think I'd been embarrassed to show him my place. My picked-over apartment was a decadent palace compared to this bleakness.
You can use the shower first,
Nick said, draping his armored coat over the back of the folding chair and then placing it against the wall so it wouldn't topple backwards from the weight.
I'll get dinner.
I think it's breakfast now, I said, setting the trash bag I'd stuffed full of my clothes down in one of the empty corners. And I'll buy the food. It's the least I can do since you're putting me up. I couldn't afford much, but I'd spotted a zip kebab on the drive over. It was the lowest form of fast food, but you got a lot for your money. When I mentioned the idea to Nick, though, he wrinkled his nose in distaste.
Save your money. If we want to eat garbage, we can get it off the street for free. Don't worry about food. I'll cook.
I gaped at him in amazement.
You can cook?
Only one dish, he said, giving me a rare smile. But I do it very well.
Sounds great, I said, and I meant it. It had been ages since someone had cooked for me. Do you cook a lot?
I cook every meal,
he said, walking over to turn on the light in the tiny kitchen, which was tucked away in its own little cement hole at the back.
It's cheaper than packaged stuff when you average it out, and the only way to know what's actually in your food. Never forget, this is the DFZ. It's not like we have food safety laws or health inspectors.
My eyes shot wide. I'd lived in this city for 3.5 years now, and the idea that no one was checking the food had never occurred to me before this moment. My stomach did a double flip remembering all the cheap takeout I'd eaten over the years. It was a miracle I wasn't dead. Well then, I said, trying not to look as nauseous as I felt. Thank you for saving me from salmonella. I moved a little closer, hanging awkwardly by the kitchen door while he pulled a very well-used frying pan out of the cabinet. Can I help with anything?
Not enough room in here for two, he said,
which was absolutely true. I hadn't even stepped through the doorway, and I already felt like I was crowding him.
Just go clean up. I've got this.
Okay, I said, stepping back. Then, because I felt the need to say something, I added, thank you. He waved my thanks away and put the pan down on his tiny one-burner portable electric range, whistling as he grabbed a head of something green out of the fridge and started chopping it straight on the counter with a chef's knife that had been sharpened so many times the blade had been worn down to a metal spike. Duly dismissed, I crept back to my trash bag, dug out some clean clothes and the toiletries I was so glad I'd remembered, and made my way to the only door in the tiny apartment I hadn't been through yet. The door to Nick's bedroom. My heart started fluttering when I grabbed the doorknob, which was stupid. I wasn't a teenager anymore. But despite going on a lot of dates in college, the number of guys' bedrooms I'd entered could be counted on one half of one hand. I wasn't overly picky or anything like that. It was the guys. For some reason, every man I showed interest in always ghosted on me after the first week. It had gotten so frustrating that I'd eventually given up on dating entirely, which had left me a little rusty at the whole, I'm so cool, I totally don't care that I'm walking into your private space song and dance. Not that this situation was anything like that, of course. I was here as a shameless couch crasher, not a date. But now that he'd taken his bulky jacket off, it was impossible to ignore that Nick was, well, a guy. A very well-put-together guy, which was only to be expected given that parts of him had been literally put together. But the stupid, fluttery parts of me didn't seem to care that the solid shoulders and back muscles I could see through his t-shirt had been shaped with a bandsaw. They just liked the way he moved. And that made walking through his bedroom to get naked in his shower super awkward. I stood there tapping my fingers nervously on the doorknob for a good 30 seconds before I realized what an idiot I was being. Nick was cooking me dinner because I was broke. And he'd asked me to shower because I probably still smelled like dead guy. There was nothing to be fluttery about in this situation. A shower was the only thrill I was getting tonight. And I was wasting time I could have spent under blessed hot water feeling awkward about things that were entirely in my head. Thoroughly disgusted with myself, I shoved the door open and marched inside, turning on the light only so I wouldn't trip over any piles of dirty laundry, only to find that there was nothing of the sort. Nick's bedroom was as empty as the rest of his apartment. That shouldn't have been a shock at this point. But for some reason, the twin mattress on the floor with its single blanket and military-style unfitted sheets hit me a lot harder than the furniture-less living room. It just looked so lonely. There was nothing personal. No pictures or books or knickknacks. He didn't even have boxes in his closet. Just more jeans and plain black t-shirts on cheap wire hangers. It was so sterile and practical that I was starting to wonder if he'd taken me to a safe house to keep me from knowing where he actually slept. That would have been suitably Nick-level paranoid, except that I'd seen him pull fresh produce out of the fridge. Perishables didn't seem like something you'd stock in a place you only visited when you needed to hide. But I couldn't imagine Nick lived in this spotless mausoleum of an apartment all the time. There wasn't even soap scum in the shower of his tiny bathroom. You couldn't be a cleaner without developing a certain level of neat freakiness, so I hadn't expected it to be that bad. But this looked like he'd just moved in. It was all very strange. But I was in no position to look clean bathrooms in the drain. I stripped off my filthy, bloody clothes and dove in, turning the water as hot as I could stand it. Nick's soap was predictably horrible. One of those super cheap, abrasive bulk bars that could double as dish soap or laundry detergent in a pinch. But in a rare stroke of good fortune, everything from my bathroom had fit into one plastic bag, which meant I had my own soap, shampoo, and conditioner. I even had my loofah, and I used it to scrub myself raw, scouring my skin until every bit of death and blood had been washed down the drain. When I was bright red and wrinkly and my hair was so clean it squeaked, I turned off the water and stepped onto the cool linoleum floor. The only floor in the entire apartment that wasn't bare cement. I had to use two towels from the stack in the plastic bin that served as a linen cabinet to get properly dry, but once I was in clean clothes, I felt like a new woman. Even my magic felt better. It barely hurt at all when I pulled a little into my palms to dry my hair so that it wouldn't curl. Satisfied that my life had finally turned at least the first hint of a corner, I put on my socks and padded back out to the living room, which smelled like heaven. "What did you make?" I asked, hurrying over to the card table, where Nick was placing a plate in front of the apartment's only chair.
"Pork and chicken sausage patties, buttered shredded cabbage, and pan-fried potatoes," he replied.
I nearly bowled him over in my rush to sit down. I'd been getting increasingly hungry over the past several hours, but it had been easy to ignore in the face of all the other impending dooms. Now, though, I was certain I would die if I did not eat in the next 60 seconds. But as I sat down and grabbed my fork to dig in, I realized there was only one place set at the table. "Aren't you going to eat?"
"I ate already,"
Nick said, walking around the table to lean against the wall where he could look at me.
"Not trying to be antisocial. It's just that I only have one plate."
"Oh," I said, pushing aside one of the perfectly fried sausage patties to get a look at the cafeteria-style hard plastic plate beneath it. "You should try a restaurant surplus store. Sometimes they have whole matching sets for less than the price of one normal plate."
"I know. I just never saw the point,"
he said with a shrug.
"I don't exactly have many guests."
Given his single chair, single plate, single bed, and single everything else, it didn't look as if Nick had ever had a guest. That made me feel a strange mix of special and sorry, because Nick wasn't a bad guy. He deserved to have more company, especially with food like this. His earlier bragging was justified. I had no idea what was in the sausage patty other than pork and chicken, but it tasted incredible. Everything did. Maybe it was the starvation, but I'd never enjoyed a plate of food so much in my life. I couldn't even talk while I ate. I was too intent on getting everything into my mouth as fast as possible without choking. Nick waited quietly until I was finished, but though his gray eyes were constantly moving, like always, they kept coming back to my face. "What is it?" I asked when my plate was spotless and every molecule of food was in my stomach. "Never seen someone vacuum up food like that before?" It was supposed to be a joke, but Nick's expression was serious.
"Actually, it's your hair. I've never seen you wear it down before. I didn't realize it was so long."
It had been a while since I'd had a haircut. I glanced down at my black hair, which was already curling up against my collarbone despite my best efforts. All the ends were splitting, too. Yet another thing I needed to take care of if I ever got money again. "It is a bit out of control, isn't it?" Nick shrugged and dropped his eyes.
"I think it looks nice."
"Thanks," I said, shifting awkwardly in my chair as I scrambled for a return compliment that wouldn't be an admission of the fact that I'd been checking him out earlier. "Your food was delicious. Thank you very much." He shrugged again.
"Everything tastes better when you're hungry, and you looked pretty hungry."
Now it was my turn to look away. "Yeah, well, it's been a rough few months, and I never was much of a cook. I certainly hadn't had the chance to learn at home. I didn't even think my mother knew what a stove was." Nick nodded as if that wasn't much of a surprise, and then he looked up again.
"Can I ask you a question?"
"Sure," I said, tilting back in the chair. "I'm your guest. The least I can do is be entertaining." His eyebrows shot up at that, but his voice was as serious as ever when he asked,
"What happened to you?"
Which part? Because there'd been a lot.
"Any of it,"
he said, looking me up and down.
"You're one of the best cleaners. I've seen you buy units guys like DeSantos dismissed as junk and turn them into piles of money. Out of all of us solo sellers, I would have bet money that you were making the most. So what happened? How did you get so broke?"
The confusion in his voice made me cringe, because I remembered the opal he was talking about. There'd been a time when I could turn a profit just by looking at a unit. Now, 5 months later, I was homeless, starving, and dependent on Nick's charity to keep me off the street. No wonder he was curious. It was quite the precipitous fall. I just wished I had an explanation to give him. But I didn't. Because even though I was the one who'd lived through it, I wasn't entirely sure what had happened either. "I've had some bad luck."
"No one's luck is that bad,"
Nick said, pushing off the wall so he could face me directly.
"What happened, Opal? Where did your money go? Did someone shake you down? Are you in debt to the mob? You don't look like you have a raging drug habit. So what is it?"
Under any other circumstances, that interrogation would have been insulting. But I actually liked Nick's bluntness. It made him sound as if he cared, which was something I didn't get a lot of these days. "Nothing so dramatic," I said with a shrug. "I've just had a long spell where none of the units I bought cleaned for enough to earn my money back. Spend 5 months putting out more than you take in, and you go broke."
"It can't be that simple,"
he pressed, leaning closer.
"I saw what you did to yourself up on the railings. Why did you push so hard?"
"Hey, you were getting shot at, too," I reminded him. "I didn't see you surrendering."
"Because I'm used to this sort of thing,"
Nick said, reaching up to tap the metal part of his chest.
"I've been risking my life for money for years. I'm made for it. You're not. Like you said in the car, you're a cleaner. We're all looking for the next big score. But you're acting like you're going to die if you don't make this work. Why? What's got you so desperate?"
That was none of his business. But I didn't get the feeling Nick was pushing to be rude. He looked really concerned. And that was touching enough to convince me to tell him what I hadn't told anyone since I'd come to this city. "I'm in debt."
"Thought so,"
Nick said with a sharp nod.
"Who is it? Loan sharks? Gangers? Someone who's going to break your kneecaps if you don't pay?"
"It's nothing like that," I said quickly. And then I took a long breath. "It's my dad." Now he just looked confused.
"You owe money to your dad?"
"For college," I said, nodding. "I got a graduate degree in magical art history from the Institute for Magical Arts. It was really expensive." Nick dragged a hand over his face.
"Let me make sure I've got this straight," he said. "You've been risking your life and dodging bullets so you can get money to pay your dad back for college?"
"Well, technically I was cleaning to get money to pay him back for college," I said. "The bullets are a new development. But, yes, that's more or less correct."
"Why?"
he demanded.
"Why even go into cleaning if you have a graduate degree? Even when you're not running afoul of guys like Kaufman, it's a dirty, dangerous job. What sort of father lets his daughter put herself at risk just so he can get his money back?"
"He doesn't let me," I said angrily. "I chose cleaning because I was good at it, and because it was the only work I could find that paid enough to cover my expenses. Everything was going great until my luck went south. That's why I need this job so badly. I haven't missed a payment yet. But if I can't get $10,000 by midnight on Friday, I'm toast. If we can find Dr. Lyle's cockatrice eggs, though, I'll be saved."
"I get that part,"
Nick said, his voice frustrated.
"But he's your dad. This is a college loan, not a gambling debt to a mob boss who's going to drop you in the river if you don't pay. I'm guessing asking for an extension is out, or you would have done that already. But it can't possibly be this bad.
I almost laughed at that. You don't know my father.
I don't think I want to, Nick said bitterly. What kind of man is all right with his daughter risking her life to pay back his money on time?
In fairness, my dad didn't know about that part. If he had, he would have put an end to it at once, but not for the reasons Nick was implying. He would have made me stop because damage would lessen my value, and if there was anything in his treasury that couldn't take a price hit, it was me. A pretty gem of very little worth.
No offense, Nick said darkly, but your dad sounds like an ass.
Oh, he is, I agreed. But happy as I am to lay all the blame at his feet, the loan was actually my idea. He didn't want me to leave home at all. The only way I could convince him to let me go away to school was if it was something I couldn't get in Korea. That was why I chose IMA. It's the best magical arts school in the world, which was the level it took to make him say yes. He only considers things worthy of his attention if they're world class. And he thought I was doing it for him, that I was trying to bring myself up to his level at last. It had been a dirty trick, but it was the only way I could think of to escape. When I graduated, he came to collect me, I went on. But I refused to leave the DFZ. When he tried to force me, I made him a deal. If he let me stay, I'd pay back all the money he'd spent to send me here. If I paid it all off, he'd let me go. If I failed, I'd go home.
Why would he agree to that? Nick asked. From what you've said so far, your dad doesn't sound like someone who takes no for an answer. Why didn't he just make you go home?
Because he wanted me to go willingly. I could still see the anger on his face. His fury at my defiance was the most terrifying thing I'd ever faced. Scarier than being shot at. Scarier than even the empty wind. The only reason I hadn't crumpled was because I'd known it was my only chance. He could have dragged me home kicking and screaming, but then he would have had to lock me up to keep me from running away. That would have made him look bad, which is the only thing he's actually afraid of. That's why I offered him the loan. He thought he was making a safe bet, that there was no way I could pay back so much money and I'd be forced to retreat with my tail between my legs. He didn't know when we agreed that I'd already discovered cleaning.
I get it,
Nick said, his face breaking into a grin.
You tricked him.
Oh, yeah. I played him good, I said, grinning back. I let him believe that I had no idea how much money I owed and that I was planning to work some entry-level museum gig. I even had a job lined up so the ruse would look legit. He was furious when he found out I was making real money somewhere else. But by then it was too late. The deal had already been made.
And do you think you'll keep his end?
Nick asked. I nodded. My dad's an ass, but he's an ass of his word. He has a very high opinion of his honor. So if you can get him to make one, he always keeps his promises. That's why he usually only makes deals that are grossly in his favor. But I got him. Oh, it took me years to set it up, but I played him for a fool. Now I just have to see it through. I'm almost there, too. You were right earlier. I was making bank as a cleaner. If I hadn't hit this stupid bad luck streak, my debt would already be paid off. That's why I need to see this job through no matter what. If I can just get that money, I can pay my dad the rest of what I owe, and then I'll be free. Just saying that word made my whole body tingle. I'd been working on this plan for so long now, I couldn't remember a time when it hadn't been on my mind. That was why I was so desperate. I'd invested so much already, put so much on the line. I couldn't stumble here at the finish line.
I couldn't.
At least this explains why you're so gung-ho, Nick said, rubbing the back of his neck. It was bothering me. The world is full of people who will do really stupid things for money. Most of them live in the DFZ. But you didn't strike me as the sell-your-mother type.
Don't give me too much credit, I warned him. My mother is worth a lot of money.
Nick gave me a scathing look.
Don't even try. If you were only in this for the money, you would have sold all those collectibles we moved out of your apartment. You wouldn't even have brought them home.
He held up two fingers.
There are two kinds of cleaners. Those who are in it for the stuff, and those who are in it for the money. You're a stuff cleaner.
And you're a money cleaner, I said, looking pointedly around at his empty apartment.
Absolutely, he said. That's important. If you don't know what people want, you can't trust them. That's why I asked what had happened to you. I wasn't trying to be nosy. I just had to be sure I knew what was driving you. Because as soon as Rena cracks that hand, we're going right back into the fray. And I don't want to be caught by any more surprises like the one on the walkway.
In fairness, that had surprised me as well. It wasn't like I'd planted my feet and chosen that ramp to die on. I'd just done what I'd needed to do to win at the time, and things had gotten out of hand. So, pretty much the story of my life, in other words.
What about you? I asked,
tilting my head back so I could see his face better.
That's my story.
But why are you fighting so hard for this?
I mean, it can't just be for the money.
Why not?
Nick asked sharply.
Money's the reason people do most things.
Yeah, but not take a bullet.
Depends on the bullet.
Come on, I said. Me being crazy is one thing. I've got my freedom riding on this.
But you can't spend your money if you're dead. He flashed me a cocky look.
It takes a lot more than a few thugs to kill me. Tonight was hairy, sure. But I've gotten through way worse for a lot less. This is my first chance at a big payout in a long time. Of course I'm going to chase it hard.
That made a Nick-ish amount of sense.
Good to know you're all in on this.
If you're not going all in, why go at all?
He said, leaning forward.
The important thing, though, is that we're both in. That makes us business partners, at least until this job is done. So from here forward, please tell me what you're going to do before you do it. I really hate surprises.
I'll try, I said. But I'm a make-it-up-as-I-go kind of mage, so no promises. If I'm going to be telling you my plans, though, the same has to go for you. No more taking me to weird places without explaining why we're there or what parts of the infrastructure I'm not supposed to blow up.
I didn't think that was going to be an issue, Nick said grudgingly. But fair enough. We share information and work together until we both get rich. Deal.
Deal, I said, putting out my hand. Nick took it with his left hand, squeezing my palm tight with fingers that felt like real warm flesh through his thin glove. I was wondering if that meant they were actually real or if I was just experiencing some really good cybernetics when Nick let me go.
That's better,
he said, letting out what sounded like a relieved breath.
Now that we're both on the same page, let's get some sleep.
Sweeter words had never touched my ears.
Do you have a blanket or something I could borrow?
I asked hopefully.
It's nice to be somewhere with working AC, but your floor looks hard.
You don't have to sleep on the floor, Nick said. I have a cot.
It was a sign of just how low my life had sunk that statement made me genuinely excited. I jumped out of the chair and took my plate to the sink to wash it off while Nick pulled a folded camp cot I hadn't noticed before out of the back of his closet. I would have done the rest of the dishes, too, but Nick had already taken care of those while I was in the shower. I took the time to brush my teeth instead, while Nick went out to his car.
When he came back, he was carrying a black sleeping bag stuffed into a sack the size of a bowling ball.
You never know when you're going to need to sleep out,
he said in response to my funny look, shaking the silky bag out of its sack and spreading it over the cot.
Are you good?
I'm great, I said without a trace of irony, grinning down at the cot and sleeping bag like they were a king bed at the Ritz. Thank you so much again for putting me up. He shrugged.
We're business partners now. I need you alert and not exhausted.
It's still very kind of you. Nick looked a lot less comfortable with that comment than he had with the helping a business partner angle.
It's nothing,
he muttered, keeping his eyes down as he picked up his gun off the table and strode a little too quickly into his bedroom.
Knock if you need anything.
I knew better than to knock on the door of a man who took a gun to bed, but I told him I would and lay down on the cot, which creaked like an old rocking chair. I barely heard it. Now that I was fed and washed, I was so tired I could have passed out on the floor. I didn't even bother getting inside the sleeping bag. The moment I stopped being vertical, I was out, falling asleep on top of the silky fabric before Nick could finish closing his door.